I'm Joyce Otten. I think I'll start today by telling you about a choice I had to make. And I think in our society today, we are going to be increasingly faced with these kind of choices that really don't seem to have right answers to them. Some of you who are here have already faced such choices, I'm going to guess. Some of you will be facing such choices as time goes on. The more medical technology finds ways to preserve and prolong life, the more choices we are faced with. In May of this year, let me start back with the end of March. In the end of March, I made a trip to see my mother. My mother's 81 years old, lived in Milwaukee, and I live in Battle Creek, Michigan. She had been living alone from the time my father died in 1970, and she wanted it that way. And whatever other choices that we suggested to her, she rejected. So we had kind of a bit of a problem because I was not living in that town, and neither was my brother, and that's the only people who were really her caregivers. In March, I went just to kind of see what she was doing. First of all, I didn't like how she was doing health-wise. Second of all, I found a major problem in her house that, in terms of plumbing work that needed to be taken care of and required remodeling. I made those arrangements and went back in mid-April because she was profoundly deaf. She could not handle changes in her house. So I needed to be there and to take her out of the house in order for these things to be done. I thought she was in worse shape when I came back, and I kept saying, "What's wrong?" And she kept saying she was fine. I'll leave her alone. Finally, I rather forced her into going to the doctor because of the way I just knew there was something wrong. Her doctor wasn't there, and his partner said her problem is all those drugs she's on. She was what you'd call a legal drug addict. She had a doctor who prescribed anything and everything, and he said, "You get her off of those and she'll be fine." Well, that's great, but we'd been trying that one for a lot of years and it hadn't worked. Took her home, and the day I was going to leave to go back to Battle Creek, I came to her house one more time, found her lying on the floor. She was not unconscious. She was also not very rational. She looked up at me and she started cussing me and saying things like, "What the hell are you doing in my house? Get out of here." You know, and I tried to find out what her problem was, managed to get her up and found that she was walking in a very unstable manner, throwing herself backwards and trying to find drugs. So I was in the business of trying to keep drugs away from her because having just had this report from the doctor the day before, I was convinced that she had overdosed on drugs and was now looking for more. And so we spent like about an hour and a half of my trying to handle a situation that I really couldn't handle. And I finally just called the rescue squad because I didn't know what else to do. Well, they came and they took her to the county hospital. First of all, my mother had always told me she would never again enter a hospital. And she had also told me that if she was so unfortunate as to have to enter a hospital again someday, the last place she would go was county hospital. So here I had her in county hospital. She was very not nice in the hospital. By 9 o'clock that night, they had her hands and feet tied, but they had not discovered what her problem was. And I left the hospital feeling very upset and also relieved. I thought, well, at least now she can't hurt herself, which is what I had felt she was in process of doing. I called the hospital back at midnight to see if perhaps she was quieter and if perhaps they had untied, and they said right after you left, she began to hemorrhage, and she's in intensive care. Of course, I was a little angry that they had not contacted me. I went back to the hospital. Shortened up the whole rest of the 3 weeks. She had a bleeding ulcer. They tried some things that I signed permission slips for, like scopes and angiograms, which were possible ways of dealing with the problem. But the real way to deal with the problem was surgery. She adamantly refused surgery. She didn't want to be there in the first place. In the second place, she said no one was touching her, no one was going to do surgery. The doctor asked me how I felt about that, and because I had made a choice about my own care, which people had supported me in, I felt, hey, I have to support this person too. This is the choice she's making. Well, my brother came, and he was very upset about the choice. And he said, we're going to operate. And I said, well, I think you have to respect her choice. And he said, you're just saying that because of the choice you made. She's not capable of making this choice. We're going to make it for her. She's going to have surgery. And I finally said, it sounds to me that you're not going to be able to live with yourself if we don't do something. So it's all right with me. You make the choice you have to make. If this sounds like we're excluding my mother, I don't know if I mentioned this already or not. My mother was profoundly deaf, had been profoundly deaf for the last 4 years of her life. The only way to communicate with her was through notes. She was also, her eyesight was failing. She didn't like to read notes. So in the hospital, she was not in a good mood. So when we would write her a note, she would frequently shove the note and say away and say, I'm not reading any more of your dumb notes. So again, we were in a bind. How do we deal with this situation? Finally, my brother determined that there was going to be surgery. So he told the doctor, we're going to have surgery. And the doctor said, no, you're not. And he says, the reason you're not is that your mother is still capable of making her own choices. And she's the one who's calling the shots, and she's the one who's saying no. So if you want your mother to have surgery, you're going to have to convince your mother. So my brother proceeded to write a whole series of notes to my mother, telling her things like, you are dying, which was true, and you must have surgery, etc. And well, those that she did read, she simply said no. 81 years old. In fact, at one point, he finally wrote a great big why. And she said, because I'm 81 years old, that's why. And that was supposed to be enough reason for us. My brother then decided that he would get a court order. And the doctor informed him that no court in the land would give him a court order because she was the one making the choices. Finally, the doctor decided to determine that there was not going to be any change in her mind. I had written her some notes early in this process that said I would respect her choice, but that if she changed her mind, she should tell me. And she never did tell me that she changed her mind. So I then proceeded to sit with her in the hospital, watching her die. And that was a very hard thing for me to do. She did not die rapidly enough to suit the hospital. Hospital withdrew anything but very necessary care. Nurses avoided the room. Doctors avoided the room. And it was just a very hard and unpleasant time. In a time during which you ponder whether or not you should be doing something other or what have you. Mom did die, and I still have some problems with that. there was a thing we were going to do, I'm going to run out of slots here, called Living with Our Choices, and maybe we can talk about that. What I want to say at this point, however, is that that is just one, and it isn't really even one of the real life support type things. When do you withdraw life support? When do you do this and when do you do that? In this particular case, surgery would have saved her life. However, it seemed very likely to me that she would no longer be able to live alone if had she survived. And the last thing on earth she wanted was life in a nursing home. So I think that's the way she was looking at it, although she didn't verbalize many of her feelings. I wish she had. That she was not about to survive, if survival meant biological life in a way that she didn't want to live. What I'd like for us to do is to talk about other choices, choices you have been involved in, or choices that you fear you may become involved in. I think I wrote some directions, and it's probably better I read them. Choose a complex life and death choice for discussion. If possible, choose one faced, past, or present by a member of your group. You're talking about a real situation. It's a whole lot different than talking about these theoretical situations. I only gave you some of the details in the choice with my mom. There are all kinds of things that are happening as people interact and relationships are threatened, and what shall we do here, and how shall we live with this? There's all kinds of things. So if you've got somebody who's been there, then when you say, well, I think this, and they can say, yeah, but this is how it was for me. Ask the group member to spell out as many details as possible so that a real person is clearly visible to you as you work. Avoid generalities. And then talk about the situation from various viewpoints. That of the person who may die, family members, because you see, there's never just one person affected here. There's all kinds of people affected by these choices. So talk about it from the point of view of family members, including primary caregivers and those more distant. You know, the primary caregiver for the person who's dying has a whole different viewpoint than the person who lives in Timbuktu and is writing letters back saying, I think you should do, you know. Representatives of the church who have some ideas that perhaps are theologically sound but may not be working in this situation. Members of the medical community, and members of the medical community have a great deal of trouble with death. Members of the insurance or other financial institutions who have ideas about how long you should live. Heirs. Sometimes, believe it or not, it is a good idea to keep a person on life support systems at least a few more days, because, you know, if they're on Social Security and you don't live till the end of the month, you have to give the check back. So maybe it's better they live into the first of next month so you can at least keep last month's check. Okay, there are all kinds of things that enter in, you know. There aren't just these, nothing is ever clear cut or black and white. So try some of these and see how you feel as you talk. There's a list of 10 questions here to guide you in your discussion. And all of you have ideas. All of you have thoughts. So feel free to express them and do that in as non-judgmental a way. I mean, do your listening in as non-judgmental a way as possible, because what the other person thinks or feels is true for the other person at this point. Then be free in expressing your point of view, which may be just the opposite. Say, well, this is how I would think or feel about it. Before we form groups, could I see a show of hands of people who have faced some sort of life-death choice that you think you would be willing to share with your group? Okay? Would you stand? How about if you stand? Because then we can form groups around these people, and we'll be dealing with real things and not theoretical things. So we get 2, 5, 6, 7. Can you just gravitate towards, maybe keep standing. Well, how about stand up here in a row? Will you do that? I'm afraid that when everybody else gets up, we're going to lose you. And so if you would come on up front.
You have 3 or 4 in a group?
And we want maybe 3 or 4 in a group if we can do it that way. I'd like to look at 6 in terms of this lady. What is your name?
We should get a first name, at least.
I'm Ella Jerome.
Ella. 6. There says, often the decision directly affects others. Your husband's decision directly affected you, right? For example, if prolonged life for this person meant You would need to give up something in order to become the primary caregiver. Would your choice be different? You did give up something, as I recall. You gave up your working as an LPN become full-time caregiver for him, right?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever, did it ever disturb you? Were there days when you thought, you know, you might just as soon go to work, or...
Well, maybe so, because sometimes it was difficult, you know, when he had pain when I would move him and hurt him, you know, it would hurt him.
He was angry because you were the only one he could strike out at.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And even though he wouldn't have done it under normal circumstances, this was not normal.
Yes, so it was hard for you to do that day by day, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, you have an idea, they give you an idea, but some of these things last much longer than you would have predicted.
Did it sometimes seem like forever to you?
Well, yes, I guess so. That's true.
Very hard.
You just don't know. I mean, it's hard to, I don't know, it's hard to express your feelings.
How long ago has this been?
It was, he died, it'll be 2 years in November.
Still, your grief is still rather new, isn't it? Still, you've still got some things probably to work through and all of that. But what do you think? And that is that when people are dying slowly, like your husband, that you work through some of the grief before they die.
Well, yes.
I think so.
Yeah. But then the thing with him, he didn't really want to talk about it very much. I think he could have talked to us, or he probably did. There was one lady, one hospice lady, that he talked to quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And he had expressed feelings about this that he made me cry, you know.
Uh-huh. So he didn't want to, he wanted to protect you.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Which is very noble of him. But,
yes, but the crying is good for you.
Yeah.
But he maybe he didn't that. Want to cry.
And yeah, that's right. I think he needed to control the situation anymore, which is...
But he found someone you think he could talk to.
Yeah, I think she told me this, you know, about that afterwards. And I know that he, well, she had such a, she was a joking sort of person. And she was just the type of person that could get close to someone, I think. Yeah.
Did your husband have a sense of humor?
Yes, he did.
Did he keep it quite long?
Well, yes, at times.
Yeah.
Yes, I think he did.
That's good.
But then, and another problem was his appetite. He just couldn't eat, and I tried to get something to get it, you know, because his skin was beginning to break down at times, you know. I'm sure, from lack of nourishment that caused it.
And that's frustrating, too, because that's something you can do, is to cook for somebody, and here it doesn't work.
Yeah.
In the trade-off, if he had gone to a hospital or a nurse's, well, not a nurse's home, a hospital, he could have gotten the intravenous feeding, which would have nourished him, but the trade-off of being there or home, he would have chosen home. So that's another difficult choice to live with.
Did you sometimes wish he'd made a different choice?
I guess afterwards I have, because of the loneliness, I guess.
Yes.
I
don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A few more months or something like that. Yeah.
It's letting go, as the young man said this morning. Letting go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Both you and your husband had to let go.
Mm-hmm.
But that is what has given up that this. Even in the beginning, there you let go of life as it was in order to move into a life that is different. Like you're giving up your job to work with him and so forth. There's lots of letting go to do, and you've still got letting go to do. We all do. These are not easy places in the road. Yeah.
Why do you think God knows that?
Are you dealing with nine?
Well, I was just, that's one, no, I was looking ten. At eight, I was looking at ten there, but I don't know as we've dealt, I haven't looked about it. See, that's nine we haven't, or eight we haven't really addressed, have we?
No, there's a lot of money we haven't addressed.
Well,
which one would you like to do?
I
don't think that, but we can discuss that. That's a question. Money. Money enters in. There's a paper here from a course I led last week. It was Common Myths About Death. And one of the common myths on that page is that money shouldn't enter in to our decisions.
So
that
money is no object.
The money is no object. Well, that's real nice to say, but money is always an object, isn't it? Did money enter into your decision at all? I mean, maybe not into the choice, but...
Not really, except that my loss of work time, I suppose. Otherwise, and that worked out very well anyway, so...
Now, was he active in his work until the time he became ill, or was he retired?
He was retired. Only had been for a couple of years, but he was totally retired.
Mm-hmm. And did he handle his retirement? Did he enjoy his retirement, or was that itself a grief experience to have to quit work?
No, I think he was a farmer, and he kind of did it gradually. So
he didn't have that grief to deal with.
And you moved off the farm?
No, I still live there.
Yes,
I still live there.
So he didn't have to give that up?
No, I would never have wanted him to do that. It happens to be a farm that his family has been on for over 100 years.
Heritage farms.
Yes. There's another question, and it's sort of off the subject, but I just throw that one out.
We were on money, and we got off that again. So, you know, we deny.
Well, I had to sell my mother's house and dispose of her possessions after she died. And that's another tough thing, that house had been around 40 years, not as long as yours. But that was the stable in my life. This is home, you know, and so there's more involved in that. But I think you can see that there's money involved in that one, too, because now if you enter a nursing home, ultimately you sell the house and everything goes to the nursing home. So that's another...
Yeah,
you know, part of those kind of choices. I don't know if that entered in as a possibility for you with your...
Well, I guess I never really considered it because I thought that I could take care of it.
Because you could do it. Yeah. Because you had the help of a hospice organization and family and friends.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if some you had not had that, you know. Let's say that you had some. I know a family, for instance, right now where the husband has been caring for a wife for 17 years who has MS and who cannot, she can't move her, even her leg, you know. He has to move it for her. Well, he just had bypass surgery and he can't care for her at the moment. So they tried having help, hired help. But this is inexpensive and yet expensive. The $7 an hour round the clock that he's been paying, he can't pay anymore. So he's now moving her into a nursing home because it costs less. And this is very, very traumatic for her because all these years he's been her sole caregiver and she doesn't want to go to a nursing home. And when you say money doesn't enter in, well, what can he do? Money enters in.
It does.
You know? So
I have another question now. Minnesota has just made it a living will legal.
Yes.
And
What does that imply? What do you mean a living will?
Well, you can say, you know, whether you want to have life support.
I was thinking of donating.
There are two copies. Well, that's part of a living will. There are two copies of possible living wills back there. In some states, you said yours just made it legal.
Yes.
Michigan, where I come from, it's not legal, but doctors will accept one as, well, this is what the person wanted. You know, you can still argue it legal. It is legal in your state.
It is now. No, I feel like I would like to have a living will. And I talked to the doctor about that before it did come legal, the doctor at our hospital. And I told him, well, our pastor had given me a copy of a living will. And he said that I could make an agreement with my doctor, you know. Mm-hmm. But the doctor refused to. He said he didn't think that he would go along with that. But then I work with him, and he knows me personally, and maybe that was part of the reason why he didn't think that he would.
Can he explain that, particularly if it's legal? What's his concern?
Well, at that time it wasn't legal. The time I talked to him,
You have no choice now. You could report that if he wouldn't agree.
Yeah, I suppose. But at the time, and the only thing that I can see, sometimes I've seen it in hospitals, or in the hospital where the family that are around will accept the decision of the patient, but then sometimes there's some that come from farther away.
Yes, and it's almost always somebody who hasn't been around.
And then they want everything done. And so I can see his point that maybe, you know, legally,
He could get in trouble.
If
it weren't a legal thing, now that's changed.
But now it's changed, and he may feel differently. Then.
Yeah, I haven't spoken to him.
There are some problems still with living wills. They give us the opportunity to say this is how we would like to have things handled. You know, I don't want to be on life support systems if it's been determined that I'm terminally ill and so forth and so on, you know, whatever the will, however the will is worded. There are problems, though, they maybe should be made very clear in living wills. People do change their minds, you know, and they may, that may seem, you know, for the 50-year-old person who writes the living will and says, this is how I want things to be, who now at 70, or something is facing something, they think, well, but life's been pretty good so far, and maybe we should prolong it a little longer after all. So I think there should be clauses in somehow.
That revise it or something.
But really, I think living wills are primarily made for when you cannot speak.
Yes.
You know, for a time when others must speak for you. And then at least they know what your wishes were. I encourage people to do this, by the way, whether or not it's legal in your state. Most doctors would like to at least know what your wishes are.
But I've heard there have been various interpretations that the patient definitely wished this be treated a certain way, and their wishes were not observed because there were other influences. There have been magazine articles saying beware of the living will and or something because
it's not all that clear cut.
And the technology of medicine and the breakthroughs and discoveries and so on.
I want your heart for an organ transplant. Yeah. So yeah. Maybe if you could be, or I want this, you know, and then again, it's a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. The organ donation.
Mm-hmm. They need so
things,
many.
They need them.
Of course.
But they don't want them if they're debilitated, if your dying is prolonged.
That's right.
Your organs are worthless. Now, can there be some kind of conflict? What kind of medical ethical things need to be set up so that we're not pushing somebody a little bit faster in order that?